Most mortgage lenders charge a fee, sometimes up to a point and a half for pulling cash out of your home's equity. Those points are on your whole loan balance, not just the cash you get. For example, if your loan amount is $400,000, that's a $6,000 fee. For a limited time, Owning will waive this fee so qualified borrowers can get a cash out refi with absolutely no closing costs of any kind. Besides the usual no title, escrow, appraisal, etc., no fees for a cash out on a 30-year fixed mortgage. So if you're in process somewhere and paying fees, call 833-2-OWNING or go to owning.com, where our rate and APR for a no cash out fee 30-year fixed mortgage is 2.625%. But hurry, the mortgage industry won't like this, so who knows when this special goes away? Call 833-2-OWNING or go to owning.com.
NMLS 2611, licensed by the Department of Financial Protection and Innovation under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. Subject to credit approval. Call 833-852-6464 for terms and conditions. Equal housing lender.
How is your mental health? Billie Eilish, Kevin Love of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Imagine Dragons, Lil Nas X, and so many more feel the same pressures we do. They're joining our host, Carson Daly, for I'm Listening, September 23rd, starting at 6 p.m. right here. Carson and a cast of mental health experts, athletes, musicians, other notables, and you will share stories, insights, and help us all remember that we are not alone. Please join us, because talking about our mental health has the power to save lives. For more, visit imlistening.org.
The shift for me really came when I was beginning to raise a family, and I was thinking, what food legacy do I want to give my kids, right? I was surviving off of frozen burritos, so I had to kind of clean it up.
Home cooking is coming back. The COVID-19 pandemic caused a surge in home cooking, which has been on the decline for decades. More than half of consumers are eating and cooking at home more frequently than before the pandemic. 71% of home cooks say they'll continue to cook into the future. This trend is critical. Americans' high-processed, takeout-heavy diets have been causing diet-related diseases like obesity and diabetes. More than half of Americans are sick because of their diets. Cooking at home is one of the single best ways to control what we eat and improve our health. While they turn away from unhealthy, processed foods and return to their kitchens, Americans are still looking for shortcuts. Meal kit delivery services are on the rise, online websites that offer recipes are popular, and so are sites that take the guesswork out of meal planning, which offer recipes, grocery lists, and checklists for getting dinner on the table every night of the week. In one survey, 93% of respondents said they wanted to eat healthier. In another survey, 49% of people said they want to eat mindfully rather than dieting. Today's guest is one of these Americans, a busy mom who wanted to leave a better food legacy for her family. So she started a meal planning company, The Fresh 20. In this episode, we talk about her tips for being practical in the kitchen, how she raises healthy children, and how she feels inside her healthier body. Our food is linked to obesity, climate change, workers' rights, and so much more. Every bite of food we chew has a story. I'm Amber Stott, food activist and founder of the nonprofit Food Literacy Center. I've worked with legislators, school districts, farmers, and chefs to rewrite the story of our food and improve my community. I want to inspire more people to become food activists. So I've invited my mentors and the activists who inspire me to share their stories and their tips on how to improve our food choices, our communities, and our planet. It's time we understand the story behind the food we eat and the impact our food choices have on our health, the environment, and our economy. It's time to start raising kale. Melissa Lance is a former marketing executive who quit her day job to focus on healthy food. She's an author of the book The Fresh 20 and runs a meal planning service with the same name. She's been featured in the New York Times, In Style, among others, and as a contributing editor for Shape magazine. She's also a wonderful cook, a mother, and a good human.
Melissa, welcome to Raising Kale.
So good to see you.
You as well. Yeah. Did you grow up eating a lot of home cooked food? And
no, my mom knew how to make five things. She was not. That's why I became the cook, because my mom was an awful cook. She cooked like five things, and one of them was Spam melt. So I had to learn how to cook. But I learned how to cook from my dad's side of the family. They're all West Indies, so they're very into cooking, and they're always cooking with fresh food. My aunt today, she's 80, and she's still cooking every single day. She cooks a meal. And she goes and she gets her produce. She goes like every 2 days. Everything like is fresh, and she does it, and that's how she's cooking. So I did get parts of that, but in my own home, like I was kind of raised on a microwave.
And so, so you had your dad's side of the family that was doing more home cooking. Where did your turn come? Is like your exposure to local?
I think, you know, I was born and raised in Minnesota until I was 12. So I got a lot of farm visits just in school in general and 4-H club and camps and all of that. Like coming from such an agricultural state, I got a lot of that. But I think as an adult and as a buyer, as a consumer, it wasn't until coming out to California. And that's where all of my friends met up on Sunday at the Sunday Farmers Market after going out and, you know, drinking or partying or, you know, on Saturday night. And then we were like, oh, I'll meet you at the farmer's market for a coffee and we'll go like, you know, get some. So that's literally how it started. It was very social. Like we were all meeting up at the farmer's market. And then as we all center off and have kids, then it was like something to do with your kids on Sunday. It was really social until it became like such a habit. So, but it started out very social, meeting friends there, you know, picking out stuff together. So that's how it started for me. And then it just became as I started to get closer to my food and start talking to people and like seeing the same vendors every week, it became something was like, wow, this is a really like good way to get closer to the food. And my own food journey has changed so much over the last 20 years, and especially, you know, with the Fresh 20. And so some point, Amber, I want to be so close to the food that it's literally like growing everywhere else. I would love at some point in my life to be completely self-sufficient and self-sustaining.
Oh, wow.
Not a huge farm, but like on a, you know, few acres of land, and be really like everything that I'm cooking is coming from that place. That's the goal.
Wow. That is the dream, right? Like
And then I can have my friends over for like a, you know, a farm fresh meal. It's like, that is the dream. I would love that.
That is a wonderful dream. It sounds like you kind of have a little slice of that right now on your vacation.
Little. Yeah. There's lots of stuff going on here. It's really nice. Yeah.
So I want to talk about all the things that you're doing with the Fresh 20. And in particular, it's really fascinating to me that I do see a lot of folks who sort of have this career shift and make a move toward food. And I think there's really something special about the food space. I think it's nourishing. It's a space of abundance. I think those are things that you really embody in your personality, but also in your business. But so talk to me a little bit about why you made this change and, you know, kind of what food means to you.
Okay, so I mean, I've been in it 11 years. It's so crazy to think about how long that I've been doing the Fresh 20 and trying to teach other families, like, right, how to eat unprocessed food and, you know, eat locally and use what you have and not waste and all of those things. And I think that the shift for me really came when I was beginning to raise a family, and I was thinking, what food legacy do I want to give my kids, right? What do I want? Because, you know, I'd gone through this phase working in corporate, eating not good things. And, you know, I think I was surviving when my kids were toddlers, I was surviving off of frozen burritos. And I thought to myself, at some point, they're going to look at me and be like, oh, like, fresh vegetables over here. But what's mom eating? Like, what's she got? So I had to kind of clean it up, right? And there was just so much conversation about all the shoulds in food, right? And you know, like you get it's like, you should do this. But nobody was like really saying how to do this, which is one of the reasons, like when I track everything that you're doing, it's just you get into the how and the why and the joy of it. And I think that kind of gets lost sometimes, right? And so I think that people are shifting into food because now there's finally the how. There's more conversations about how to compost, how to grow your own food supply, how, you know, how to actually, shop, who to look for, that you can actually ask the grocer, like, where did this come from? People didn't really even understand that before. We weren't even having that conversation about what do you mean where it come? Who cares where it came from? It's like sitting here in front of the grocery, like, I'm just going to take it. So I think the how is really becoming a part. So it's not just the like you should and why, right? Everyone's kind of getting into like, oh, this makes sense. Like, and it's so amazing when you start doing these things for yourself, when you actually know where your food supply is coming from and you have a relationship with the grower, right? Either by going to your farmer's market and like getting to know their family, getting to know like, you know, when did you harvest this? Like all of those things. It's really fascinating. We grew 4 different kinds of tomatoes this year. We grew Maui onions for the first time and we did it wrong, but they were still delicious, right? And so I don't know. So I think that how is getting people really excited.
How did you understand that was something that you, like a gift that you could share? Like, what was it about that? Because I think, you know, we've known each other almost this whole time. And
yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of people took the path of starting a food blog where they just post whatever recipes and they're free, but you took the path of this meal plan, and that's a very unique path. And you are one of the very early folks to create these meal plans. Now they're a little more popular, but like, how did you have that idea and want to do it that way? Because I actually think in many ways what you're doing is a bit harder.
Yeah, well, it's harder in the sense that you, like, once you start taking money from someone, you have to be consistent and publish, like, when you say you are every single week, and you've got to, you know, so I think that it just seemed, you know, I'm coming off of something where I was in a very lucrative corporate job. So when I shifted over and wanted to make food and family my priority, I had to do it in a way that was like going to be revenue generating. But I think that the sweet spot was taking what I already knew how to do and what my friends and my family and my community always came to me for, right? I was the planner. I was the person, like I did all of when somebody was having a, you know, a birthday party, they called me like, I'm having 16 people, like how much food am I supposed to get? What am I, like, help me. And so I had been doing that my whole life. So it really, I think when people switch over into making something a business, I think sometimes they go with things that they think are going to make money instead of going with the things where they're really good at that thing and they could just tweak it a little bit to be a service. You know, a product or a service that could be helpful to other people. So that's how it came out for me. I was always the chef and I was always the planner for everybody. And I do it not only for food, but travel too. Like all my friends, I plan all of their vacations. So I just took something that could save people time every week and values that I think are really important, right? It's not fanatical eating. It's not, it's planning, it's wasting less. And I listened to the conversations that were happening for a lot of the different families around me at the time when my kids were, you know, 3 and 4, I was listening, you know, to the, where were their pain points? Like, what was the hardest thing? And I think any good company that you're going to start starts from that, right? So even if you look at the food blogs that are like really, really popular, they're serving some sort of pain point. And some of them, it's just even a sense of belonging, right? A sense of having a place. You know, I mean, I know with a gluten-free girl, when she first started, it was having a place of belonging, right? Some place where people could go and connect with other people that were having that same issue or that same pain point. So I think it's really important to look at, you know, if for any type of food endeavor, to look at what you do best, right? and what can you create that's really helpful, useful, resourceful to other people? Because I think that's where the gold is when you're thinking about generating revenue with a food business.
Yeah. And so talk about that a little bit, like the families that are using this plan. I mean, it feels like this is very personal to you. And when you are on your site and you're looking at how people, there's a lot of comments on there about how much people, it's changed their lives. They love it. I mean,
yeah. It is. I think there are days, like, let's be honest, there are days in my business where I'm like, I don't do this anymore. And then oddly enough, like I get an email from somebody that is telling me, I just found you. And you have made such a difference in our household. Like we're sitting down at the table, there's less stress, like it's organized, like I post the meal plan up on the refrigerator, which is like, honestly, for kids, you know, kids love stability. They love to know what's coming. And when you post that, it not only tells them, either, even if you just write down what you're eating every single day and post it for your family, it gives kids such a sense of security to know that there's like actually family meals happening. And it seems like, well, of course they know family meals are happening, but it's just that little trigger in their head that tells them, mom and dad, like our family, like we're gonna, on Friday, we're having whatever, spaghetti and meatballs, whatever it is, right? And they can look ahead, and that's just one less thing that they have to subconsciously stress about in their life. And well, so
there's a lot of data supporting that, even in the research that we do with our kids, supporting family meals and cooking at home and what it does for mental health, physical health. So yeah, you have keyed in on that. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's the important part to me. So the days when I feel like, you know, things are breaking, technology's going crazy, some, you know, we have hacker alerts or whatever's happening, right? All of those things. And 11 years in, you know, I kind of, you know, you get a little bored. I'm like, 11 years of meal plans. So that's what keeps me going, is knowing that people are still discovering that these tools that they can use to have a better kitchen story, a better family food culture. And I think for me, that's what it's about. It's about a family food culture. And, you know, I was telling you before, like my kids, they're now 15 and 16 and 6'3" and two 6'3" boys. And I can tell you that the work that I put in early on just to be at a dinner table, have healthy food in my house, like not, you know, that work is now in the fabric of their own personal food culture. So, you know, and I watch it unfold because now they, you know, a lot of times they make their own food choices. And yeah, sometimes they want to dive into the, you know, the junk food chips or the Doritos or whatever it is. But for the most part, like the fabric of their food decisions, it's been woven. And that, as a mom, I feel like, oh, that's like one thing I don't have to worry about them in life. Like they're not going to be, you know, drive-through fanatics and things like that, because they actually understand the connection between what you eat and how you feel. And that's something I'm really, really proud of as a parent. And I know that a lot of the families that are on Fresh 20, they're teaching their kids that too.
How many vegetables do you think are in Melissa's weekly meal plan? 2, 4, 20? Find out when we come back from this quick break.
Most mortgage lenders charge a fee, sometimes up to a point and a half for pulling cash out of your home's equity. Those points are on your whole loan balance, not just the cash you get. For example, if your loan amount is $400,000, that's a $6,000 fee. For a limited time, Owning will waive this fee so qualified borrowers can get a cash out refi with absolutely no closing costs of any kind. Besides the usual no title, escrow, appraisal, etc., no fees for a cash out on a 30-year fixed mortgage. So if you're in process somewhere and paying fees, call 833-2-OWNING or go to owning.com, where our rate and APR for a no cash out fee 30-year fixed mortgage is 2.625%. But hurry, the mortgage industry won't like this. So who knows when this special goes away? Call 833-2-OWNING or go to owning.com.
NMLS 2611, licensed by the Department of Financial Protection and Innovation under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. Subject to credit approval. Call 833-852-6464 for terms and conditions. Equal housing lender.
You want to know what Wagertainment is? It's the picks, the analysis, the information mixed with the laughter and the entertainment, smart sports betting content that'll put a smile on your face.
The BetQL Network, streaming live each day and helping you bet smarter.
If you're a sports fan, you know why you should listen. It's sports betting content without the BS. No hot takes, no nonsense.
The BetQL Network, streaming live right now on Odyssey.
Sports, bets, and entertainment.
I'm Doc Rivers, and I'm proud to present a new podcast documentary series called It Was Said Sports, where I guide you through six of the most impactful and timeless speeches in sports history. Listen and follow It Was Said Sports, a documentary podcast presentation of Shining City Audio, a C-13 Originals, and John Meacham Studio. Available now on Odyssey and wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So what you're eating and how you're feeling, how are you building that into your plan? I know you have dietitians.
Like it's a pretty, it's a formula by now. We've been doing it a really long time, but it's really just, okay, what's in season, and taking three proteins of some sort, no matter if they're plant-based or, you know, carnivore, whatever it is. We have a lot of different plans. So three proteins and about 12 to 14 fruits and vegetables, usually about two fruits, 12 vegetables that go into that. And then some other miscellaneous things. It's interesting because we're on vacation at our lake house right now, and the meals are different up here, right? Because it's like we're feeding 16 people and, you know, we're doing stuff. But it's interesting, the same things apply, like taking a limited amount of ingredients and how what can we do with those, and how can we mix and match them, and how can we, and so we're making really, really healthy meals, and then some really amazing, like, fresh homemade desserts. Like yesterday I made a cherry cobbler because there's a cherry tree here and we just harvested it. There's a raspberry patch and we harvested that, so we'll be making like raspberry muffins and everything. And so the treats are still coming from an idea that it's fresh, right? I typically do not buy store-bought treats. Like, everybody's got to have like the one rule for themselves, right? Like, some people it's no sugar during the week, right? And some people, mine is, it's like, I'm a homemade treat person. I'm not buying it at a store. It's just not happening. Maybe at like a boutique bakery or something like that, right? But I make it from scratch. And that makes me feel like I still have control over what I'm eating and I'm not getting processed. So yeah, I think you just find a formula that works for your family. There's so many resources. Some formulas are just like, I have a friend, her only formula is on Sunday night. She just does her Instacart grocery things to have it delivered at 5 p.m. when she gets home on Monday. And then at least she knows she has groceries, right? Yeah. That's her only rule for the week. And it's that little helpful thing that she does consistently every single week. But guess what? It's like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, she doesn't do takeout because she knows that she has groceries coming and she's thought a little bit ahead. So it doesn't have to be like the full planning, but it does take just a little bit of forethought. And it's like, what can I do this week to make my food intake for me, my family, however it is, a little bit easier and a little bit healthier?
Part of that is you're helping people build habits, and that is precisely what makes healthy eating stick. Is, you know, you're making it easy by creating a plan. You're giving them their grocery list. You're giving them their recipes. I mean, you're taking out the mental work of it for a lot of folks, and yeah, you're helping them build a habit because, you know, talk about that sense of it.
I mean, I think that's the biggest thing when it comes to food. And I don't know if you know my whole story. It's a little bit in my cookbook, but I, you know, I was a full binge eater when I was a teenager, and I've been every, like, size wise, I've been everything between a 4 and a 14. So I've, like, food and my relationship with food has changed you know, dramatically as an adult and as a mother, but it all got down to habits. Like, what are the things that I can do consistently to, you know, to help not only like raise my kids, but build good habits for me as well. So some of those habits just come down to making like little rules for myself. I'm typically like a no seconds person. So that's just a habit. And I don't even think about it anymore because I just did it. I just started to do it. I just made that rule. Like, I'm not going to take seconds. Like, it's just, you know, I think that's just the one way that I can control my own portions. So if you can do a habit long enough that it just becomes a way of life, it works really, really well. The one habit that we find hard to break in our family is weekend takeout. So if you have any suggestions on how to, because I think at the end of the week, like, everyone's kind of tired and, you know, yes. And the funny thing is we have leftovers or something, but it's just so funny. We've gotten into the habit with our teens of it's takeout on the weekends. And so I want to break that habit because not only is, you know, it gets expensive, but we typically aren't eating as healthy on the weekends as we are Monday through Friday. So I'm always searching for little ways to optimize and to do things. But that used to be our habit, was like take out once a week. And that was the habit that we got into. And then the pandemic happened and we were like in the house more. So then it kind of bumped up. My habits all come down to how to avoid overindulging. So one of the habits that we had as a family when we were, when our kids were growing up, is we had one Sunday a month was Donut Sunday. And that's how we eliminated any questions from our kids. Can we get donuts today? Can we get donuts today? Can we get it? Because we literally wrote on the calendar, Donut Sunday. And that was a habit we did for like 8 years. So just little things like that. And then we had like one Saturday night a month was ice cream. Like, we went out for ice cream Sundays. And so just having those habits, it's like the little rules, it really has a big impact. And you don't have to keep answering the same questions to your family because you've integrated the habit into your life. So I think anything like that, like, what's your big habit?
My big habit? I've not been asked a question before. I kind of like that. I would say mine started actually in the recession, the first recession. I was on unemployment, so on a very tight budget. And so, you know, as someone who cooks and really likes food, to be very limited in what I knew I could cook with, having your income suddenly go away, that's when I became a locavore. And I didn't know if I could do that on a budget, right? Because that was kind of when local food, everybody started talking about it so much. And I was so excited about how high of quality of food I could eat on such a low budget just by shopping with our farmers and such. And so I have it then of I would go to the farmer's market in advance of the grocery store. And so if, for example, I like having bananas in the house, but I was like, well, what fruits are at the farmer's market that are local instead of buying bananas? And so I actually now, and I love bananas still, but they're like a treat now, only because I want to support, if I'm going to spend money on food, I want to support our farmers. So anyway, I would say, that's one of my habits. But what you're bringing up about these habits that I really like is that you're specifically leaning into something that I think has been really important with our kids as well at Food Literacy Center, is that you aren't taking things away, right? You're saying there will be donuts. We're going to limit our donuts. There will be ice cream. We're going to limit our ice cream. We're not taking those things away. And I think a lot of people fear quote unquote healthy eating because they think you're gonna take all the things that, you know, like, I don't take bananas away from myself.
Right. And I think that's you make those choices, but your habit is farmer's market first. right? That's a great habit. Farmers market first, before you go and you get the fruit and you're not quite sure, you know, how far it traveled or whatever. Farmers market first is a great, great habit. And also just like eating in season vegetables and so many things that like come out of that. And I think that's a great habit. Like one other one of my habits is I de-stem all my herbs at the beginning of the week, because if I don't, then they just go bad. I don't do it. Like I just don't, it's like, so I do it all at the beginning of the week so that they're ready. And that's just, it's just a habit. It's just something super simple, right? That you could pick up. And I think that's really, really important. And the other thing is like little things, like I don't put the serving dishes on the table. Right? That's just a habit that I have. Like I keep it in the kitchen. So they have to consciously get up from the table to go have seconds. And if I put it on the table, then everybody's just like you're talking and you're unconsciously eating. Right. So it's just like those little tweaks that become really good habits to have. And there's so many around food that you can have, but I love that one for farmer's market first. That's an important one for everybody that has access to a farmer's market, because, you know, you got to support the farmers. You have to support local. You know, if you don't support local, we won't have local.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah.
Got us through. So what are families on your plan eating this week?
Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to look because, let me think. I think there was, well, which plan? Because, you know, we have six plans. So I can tell you.
Do you use your meal plan sometimes?
Yeah, no, we use it. We use it all the time. It's just that we don't use it up at the lake house because we're, right, you know, on vacation. But this week, I can tell you, we are. All right. They are having slow cooker Mediterranean chicken, ooh, roasted gazpacho with grilled shrimp. Oh. Sausage, pepper, and broccoli rob medley, chicken salad sandwiches, and lemon herb couscous. We always have one vegetarian, and this is the classic plan. So on the classic and the paleo and the gluten-free, we always have one vegetarian meal and one seafood meal every week, because we try to make sure that, you know, it's not even, I think even we're a carnivore family, but we, not every day. Like we just, you gotta like meat every day is not a good idea. And interestingly enough, we're eating less and less and less meat with our meals. Right. So it's, yeah, it's important. The variety is important. So, yeah, so that's what's happening on the Fresh 20 and this week. And then the vegan plan, I'll tell you what's on the vegan plan. Eggplant garbanzo saute, roasted gazpacho, white bean and broccoli rabe with quinoa, grilled eggplant toast with spinach apple salad, and then the lemon herb couscous. At the lake, we use the grill a lot at the lake. We have like a smoker. So we're doing a bunch of smoked dishes, some smoked fish dishes. We make these big like tortilla casseroles, like green chili casseroles and stuff, all, like the lake house stuff, you know, stuff you would eat around the campfire and stuff like that. We like to be traditional.
Are you actually fishing for your fish, or you brought the fish?
No. We'll fish this week. And they're little. So they like, we use them as appetizers, but we'll get like, you know, 20 of the little, you know, little trout or something. And then we'll clean them and put them in the smoker. They were so good. Yeah. I think you shouldn't eat anything you're not willing to kill with your own two hands. I don't want to get political, but I told my kids that all growing up. And there was a time when they would look at something and they would think about it and they were like, no, I don't want to eat that because I don't want it. And when they were really little, they're like, well, mom, like, how would we, like, we have to wrestle a cow down to the ground? Like, how would we do that? You know? And but it was just the sense of like, I want you to think about where your food is coming from, right? I want you to like really, really think about it. And I think that our society, we're raised just walking into a supermarket and it's all there with like actually no conscious thought about where it goes, right? So we, you know, we work with small purveyors and that we actually know the people raising the livestock, and, you know, we'll do a couple of buys from them every quarter. And like, we know who is growing chickens, and we know, like, we know the people, right? So it's less the whole commercialized thing. And I would say for food, like, know where your food comes from, and ask your person. If you are, you know, if you're not plant-based, then I think it's really important to ask those questions, and maybe even start asking for more local livestock growers and say, you know, can you get anything local for me? The more people ask, the more it will start to come into that maybe we can get rid of this massive manufacturing that's happening and start doing things a little bit more broken down and locally on farms.
Kale raisers at home, this is Melissa's advice. You absolutely can change what your grocer has on offer by asking and requesting. You will find that they do want to be responsive. So if you say, hey, you know, I'd love to see more local chicken or whatever, you will find that they respond. And then if it sells well, they'll continue to enhance those products. So do ask.
Yeah. Ask and have all your friends ask too, right? It's like mass, go to that one store, just have everybody, like, you know, go in during the week and ask for a certain grower and research. Like, we have the internet. There's so many, there's amazing livestock farms out there that are really, really small. Some are doing some heritage, like really, really taking such good care of the animals. And I think, like, they're around everywhere. So an internet search, you can even go visit, get a little closer to your food, I guess is what I would say, just a little closer.
One other thing I wanted to touch on, I know we're limited on time, but I did want to touch on, you brought up sort of body image, and I know you've got a couple of challenges on the Fresh 20, like the no sugar challenge, and I'm wondering if, as you see your customers live into these meal plans and really embrace home cooking, if you also see them wanting to improve other aspects of their health, or if this is personal for you.
No, that's been the progression of, I think, the business. Is first we were just solving that problem of what's for dinner. And as, like, about 5-6 years into the company, then we really realized, oh, like, people want more wellness resources, right? How can I have a 360 wellness, and all leading back to food in some way? But we started to really realize that, like, food is just like the entry point into self-care. And so we kind of, like, went with that and, you know, started these wellness programs, because it is very personal to me. Body image is something I still struggle with today. I think the other day I just posted something on Instagram or something where I was like, this is the hardest part of my year is trying on a bathing suit. It's literally like, I can do all the things. I can be the supermom and the boss and the CEO and the thing, right? Give me a challenge, I'm with it. But that is that, like, honestly, emotionally, it just takes you through so many different things, right? But here's my trick. The more I eat well, the better I mentally feel about my body. My body could look the same on any given day, but when I'm eating well, it's fueling, like, really, it's fueling my mind to work in a better, like, cohesive way with my body. But I think that's what it is. It's just eating well. It's the jumping point for all sorts of self-care, mental, spiritual, emotional, physical. Like, but eating well is the beginning of that. And when you can eat well, your brain works really, really better.
Absolutely. I think the fact that you keep hitting on this, you know, how it's about how you feel. Mm-hmm. And I just think that is such an important message. And I hope that folks really embrace that. And I just, I'm so grateful for your time. I want to be mindful of letting you enjoy your vacation. And good for you for making that time and taking a break. And so thanks for taking time to chat with me.
It's so good to see you. I love everything that you're up to always. Like, you're just such an inspiration. I just think that what you've committed to in your life, what you've been able to achieve so far with food literacy. It's absolutely amazing. I want you to keep doing what you're doing. Any way that I can support, I will. And I'm just so in awe of everything that you've built and continue to strive for to help other people. So I just wanted to say that, because you're just inspirational.
Well, that means a lot. Thank you. That really, that made my day. Thank you. I need to have hard days too. So thank you.
Right. Exactly. Right. You need somebody else to tell you, like, oh no, like, you're doing an amazing job. We need to be supporting each other and holding each other up, because it is, some days it's the technology. It's the, you know, you're getting pushback on something. We have to remind each other, this is the good work, man. This is the good work. There's nothing more important than what we fuel ourselves with, and teaching other people how to do that, and especially teaching the kids.
And thanks for your support over the years and your friendship, and keep being a Kayla Raiser out there. And I hope we get to connect again soon.
Absolutely.
Melissa is such a grounded, inspiring woman. She really embodies a life well lived that is also realistic. I'm glad you joined me for this heartfelt conversation. Thanks so much for listening. Please help me spread the word about these inspiring Kayla Raisers by sharing this episode and rating the podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. September is Food Literacy Month. Help us celebrate with our Veggie of the Year contest, where kids vote for their favorite vegetable. Join the joy at foodliteracycenter.org. Next week, you'll get your daily dose of joy with Tess Masters, the blender girl. She puts the fun in healthy food with her simple approach to cooking with a blender. You'll meet a new food hero in every episode. Next time on Raising Kale.
I'm Erin Ryan, political commentator, comedy writer, and host of Crooked Media's Hysteria.
And I'm co-host Alyssa Mastromonaco, former White House Deputy Chief of Staff for President Obama.
Each week on Hysteria, we are joined by a team of hilariously opinionated ladies to discuss the headlines from the serious to the absurd.
We cover everything from reproductive rights to rom-coms and break down the political news of the week and cultural stories that affect women's lives.
New episodes of Hysteria drop every Thursday. Listen on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Most mortgage lenders charge a fee, sometimes up to a point and a half for pulling cash out of your home's equity. Those points are on your whole loan balance, not just the cash you get. For example, if your loan amount is $400,000, that's a $6,000 fee. For a limited time, Owning will waive this fee so qualified borrowers can get a cash out refi with absolutely no closing costs of any kind. Besides the usual no title, escrow, appraisal, etc., no fees for a cash out on a 30-year fixed mortgage. So if you're in process somewhere and paying fees, call 833-2-OWNING or go to owning.com, where our rate and APR for a no-cash-out fee 30-year fixed mortgage is 2.625%. But hurry, the mortgage industry won't like this, so who knows when this special goes away. Call 833-2-OWNING or go to owning.com.
NMLS 2611, licensed by the Department of Financial Protection and Innovation under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. Subject to credit approval. Call 833-852-6464 for terms and conditions. Equal housing lender.
I'm Doc Rivers, and I'm proud to present a new podcast documentary series called It Was Said Sports, where I guide you through six of the most impactful and timeless speeches in sports history. Listen and follow It Was Said Sports, a documentary podcast presentation of Shining City Audio, a C13 Originals, and John Meacham Studio. Available now on Odyssey and wherever you listen to your podcasts.